guess my first question was, having cancer, you drew a parallel in your responses between having cancer and being a prisoner of war, because you're trapped and there's, like, an imminence of death.
Right.
Do you feel like having cancer is a triumph, or, like, do you have triumphalist understanding of beating cancer?
I guess so. I'm not sure exactly what triumphalist understanding is, but it kind of resonates with me.
Okay.
Because I made it, I'm alive, and so I do consider, you know, sort of that I beat it, survived it, you know, fought it, and suffered through it and took everything it could throw at me, but I'm still here. So yeah, I do have that sort of celebratory sort of approach to it. But, you know, at the same time, I'm still pretty humbled by it, because there were a lot of complications that didn't come up early in life, but are starting to come up late in life. But the fact that I lived as many years as I do, I mean, my wife and I still both celebrate that and are still pretty surprised by it.
Did you meet your wife before or after cancer?
Just after. So I was actually teaching a class on cancer at Berkeley as an undergraduate. The American Cancer Society wanted a class taught, and I happened to be working for the only MD on campus, and I owed him a favor, so he fingered me to run this class. When I first got diagnosed, I transferred to UC Berkeley as a junior, and I was a pre-med, and I got this diagnosis, and like only about a 20% chance of living, but I was really scrambling around trying to up that number.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that the world's expert on Hodgkin's disease was at Stanford, which isn't too far from Berkeley. It's commute distance, you know, it's about an hour drive. And so I tried to figure out how I could stay at Berkeley, because my parents had no medical insurance. So that's the only place I could have medical insurance, so I could be seen at Stanford. Otherwise, I'd have to go on welfare and go home and live with my parents and be seen at UCLA. So I found this guy who was the only professor at Berkeley with an MD at the end of his name, and talked him into giving me 9 units of independent study. And I asked him, what do you want me to do for these 9 units? And he said, well, I don't know, write a paper or something if you don't die. And so I ended up working in his lab, and we became good friends, actually. And then a year and a half later, when the American Cancer Society came through, looking for someone to run this class, I found out what I was going to do for my 9 years of independent study. When I taught that cancer class, we took a very multidisciplinary approach to the whole subject, and we had a psychologist come in and talk about death and dying, and we had economists come in and talk about the cost of smoking cigarettes to the American taxpayer. So we looked at cancer from a lot of different point of view, not just have a breast cancer surgeon come in and stuff like that. I had 420 kids take that class. So it just shows you how much interest there actually is in this subject.
How interesting. So what made your wife interested in taking the class?
She says it was just, you know, that she knew people that have had cancer, and she had read that, you know, in the course of a lifetime, you will know a lot of people or have it yourself, and she wanted to know about it. And, you know, I made it pretty inviting. I mean, since I went through 13 months of treatment, mostly chemotherapy, and so if you throw up for a living for 13 months, you don't get many dates. And so I was looking for a date, frankly. And I designed this path not pass, spring quarter, 3 o'clock to 4:30, right before the cocktail hour. I intended to empty out every sorority house on campus, and she was sort of caught up in that sweep, I believe. And but she was also in my discussion section, which I had two discussion sections. So I think that was kind of a coincidence. Because we had 20 discussion sections. I had a lot of volunteer students teaching it with me. Nice. And so that was just a lucky break, I think.
The the reason that I asked that question is because I think one of the differences between your experience and my experience is I was a pretty small child when I had cancer.
Right.
And I don't view, like, having cancer as something that I overcame as much as it is an experience that happened to me, because I was too young to take initiative to, like, find the doctor that I wanted, or even really comprehend what was happening to me at the time that it was happening.
Right.
So that's one of the differences between experiencing similar cancers, but at different ages.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. I noticed in either your essay or your answers, you said that it's really more about your mother surviving it than you surviving it. I thought that was pretty well put.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
What has writing done for both of you in terms of being able to assimilate this experience or share it with other people?
Actually, I don't know. I don't have a very developed answer for that. Writing is a function of, like, making permanent my ideas, which, I don't know. Roger, can you answer that?
Yeah, sure. For me, it's more a process of trying to find it. So I was in pre-med. I had just broken up with a girlfriend of like 2 years. It was a very intense relationship, and I was in a new city, new college, and which I was up for. But with all that going on, I was, being a pre-med is kind of life and death. So, right? I mean, you're trying to get into medical school. If you get like a D in something, you're just done. I mean, you're toast. I mean, you can't do it. You can barely even get a C. And so it was such a pressure cooker hustle for me anyway. And coming from a background where, you know, we were middle class-ish, we were sort of lower middle class, but we never had any money. And so I just really wanted to not be broke anymore. So I had this incredible pressure I put on myself to do well. You throw cancer in the middle of that and all that treatment. It was just a blur. I mean, it was just a hustle. It was just a ginormous, oh my God, this is just yet another life and death thing. And it's sort of the ultimate, the bigger one, the mother of life and death things. And so, you know, I'm just going to have to put my head down and get through it and try to win wherever I can win and try to scratch a few more survival percentages wherever I can find them. They told me they weren't going to let me into medical school because I was probably going to die on them in medical school. They weren't going to let me in until my numbers got better. So they said, why don't you go, you know, buy a car, date a girl, go to the movies, you know, do little kid. Take the heat off yourself for a couple of years. And I did that, and I switched my major to computer science, and I had to do a fifth year because I switched so late. And all my scholarships ran out, so I had to have a full-time job. And I worked on a database management system problem for Bechtel Engineering and built them an application on top of a database management system. And so I invented a new kind of database management system. Worked for a small computer company for a couple of years designing it and building related products, and then started my own company, and it was very successful, and I took it public and made a big bag of money, and I never looked back, right? So so this is kind of my opportunity to look back. I always did a little creative writing since, you know, high school, and took a few creative writing classes in college, but now that I'm, you know, half retired, I have the opportunity to spend a little more time on it. I've gone back and I've gotten all the poems that I ever wrote and edited them, and I've been writing a bunch of new ones. And for me, long answer to the question, it's a way of looking back and trying to figure out what the hell happened, what's going on during that. All those, you know, emotions that I buried or didn't acknowledge or just didn't have time for or didn't have perspective on and didn't understand all the challenges that I went through, trying to get a grasp on them. the writing helps me do that.
Right. The writing,
understand the whole thing.
Oh, okay. So you, use it to reflect on your own experiences?
I would say more to explore and understand.
Your experience. Okay.
Rather than reflect.
Right.
And, I think it turns out of several, I don't know, probably 40 or 50 poems I've got in my little file folder of poems, I think only 6 of them or something are about cancer or about my illness.
Uh-huh.
So I can see elements of the of having cancer sort of scattered through a bunch of other ones, just little pieces of it. I can see the experience maybe not being the subject of more than 4 or 5% of the essays you ever write, but uh-huh. I think your experience and the perspective in particular will be some element of almost all of those essays. So I think you've got not only a unique talent, but a unique opportunity combined with the fact that you are a survivor.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
In some ways, Roger is saying that writing helps him know what he felt. You know, that he was so impelled to move through it and you know, get beyond it or survive it, that what you felt about it all was sort of missing. But it sounds like for you, it's more what you think about it as well.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, for me, writing can be therapeutic, but it's not, fundamentally therapeutic. I write about a lot of people and a lot of people's experiences, so I think that writing is more a manifestation of my personality and my ability to empathize with others and tell their story. This is one piece that I've written, but I write a lot of pieces, and very rarely the subject is me.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that case, I guess, artistic writing serves a different function than therapeutic writing. And artistic writing for me is more like an exploration of different human experiences. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and also perhaps writing about your own story inside that context brings it into a world where all of these stories can coexist. I'm very interested in what role stigma plays in societies. And a lot of it is that people want life to take place within certain bounds. It's just, I don't really want to know that. I don't really want to go there. And that has an effect on our own ability to locate within these extreme experiences in a positive way. So I'm curious about, with both of you, how how do you handle that, well, I don't really want to know about it experience, in terms of how you process internally that experience and how you also relate to other people?
I came to an understanding early on that there are two kinds of people. And this is sort of an acid test. If you tell them your story and they really don't want to hear it, that's one kind of person. I mean, if they really back away from it, like, oh my God, that is strange and foreign and unseemly, and I don't want to get into that. I want to go over and get an appetizer over this half of the party and away from you. If you get any of that sort of body language or intonation in the voice or whatever, and then there's the other kind of person that immediately tries to put themselves in your shoes and tries to understand what you went through. And so it's sort of the great sorting algorithm.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to have a friend in high school whose parents died in a car crash when she was 8. And she and I used to joke about how to gauge when it's appropriate to tell the problems that we've had in our lives to other people, because whenever she shared that fact with people, they would stop or freeze and say, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. And in that, we had to figure out, like, the impact of having experience, like how much you want to share with people, I guess. And the thing that she and I both did as we reached an age of maturity is we started making fun of the trauma. She used to say, you know, I might be a ward of the state, but I get to go to college for free, so it's okay. And I used to, and I make the joke about bananas. Like, I didn't write, I'm a survivor in my piece. I'm like, I don't like bananas because it's funnier and it alleviates any problem, any, like, I don't know, severity of the situation and makes it accessible to people when we're talking about our experiences.
Roger, you know, was older. You know, we were talking about that earlier when he had cancer. And so he had already a clear set of goals for himself as an adult. And you had cancer when you were very young. Do you feel that it affected how you saw adulthood, so that you saw it maybe a little differently from peers who had not had an experience like yours, or?
Yes, absolutely. Cancer affected everything in my life between the ages of 3 to 7, and then afterwards because of recovery checkups. But those were really formative years of childhood, where many adults were concerned with my health and well-being, so I got a lot of extra attention that other kids might not have had. But I also wasn't able to go to places that have a high risk of spreading diseases because of autoimmune deficiency or immunodeficiency or something. But because of that, I wasn't able to be in contact with other children my age for a large part of my childhood. And that, that isolation affected my outlook and my mentality for years to come. Also, I had relationships with my cousins because they used to come over all the time because I could see them because they were family. My cousins, like, had hair, and adults used to always say, like, that I was really, really pretty because they wanted to, like, affirm to me how beautiful I was all the time. And it actually kind of created a rift between my cousins and I because they were like, you always got special treatment. And I didn't, it just, it affected all of my relationships in childhood and the way I was treated. And it affected my outlook for years to come.
Did it affect what you aspired to?
No.
What?
Yes?
What year of school are you in now?
I'm a sophomore at Emory University.
Okay. So you're still figuring out what you want to be.
Yes, I am. I am figuring it out, and I don't know what I want to be. And I don't think that cancer had a strong effect. Cancer made me not want to go into the medical field, because I didn't enjoy being in hospitals, I guess. But other than that, I think my personality is just more creative than it is anything else. So I have to figure out a career that's compatible with me, independent of cancer.
One question I have is, it is, you were asking Jane Marie about sort of a triumphalist view, but I remember reading when about childhood trauma that you had these extreme experiences had sort of two effects that seemed a little paradoxical. One was to feel in some ways that your future was foreshortened. I think Roger is talking about that, about, you know, everything was equivalent to death. You know, I didn't have that much time to do things. But the other was a feeling of, in some ways, being special, being chosen, that there was something, and that maybe it's just, you know, like that survival glow. I did survive this. And not necessarily as a triumphalist thing, but just an experiential reality. I did survive this. And I'm curious whether you have that feeling about your experience with cancer, that there's a special blessing for, you know, that's, you know, an assurance of some kind that there's something good in there for you.
Right. Yes. Looking back on it, I definitely see those two reactions. But while I was having cancer, I was under the age of 7, and I didn't fully comprehend how close I was to death. I didn't half comprehend it. Nobody ever told me, oh my goodness, you're close to death. They said things like, you have cancer. And in my mind, I kind of incorporated it like an identity. Like you're a Christian, you're a female, you're a whatever. It's part of your identity. In that sense, I didn't understand the imminence of my situation. And I really didn't understand it until I started seeing other people who I knew from the treatment center who had died, mm-hmm. like other children who had not been able to survive. That's when the gravity of the situation hit me, but not before them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Roger, you were saying that in some ways there is this triumphalist part, but is there also that other part of just, wow, you know, life has been good to me.
Well, the first 20 years of my life,
no.
life wasn't all so great to me. Uh-huh. And then I got cancer, and it was you know, pure hell for a couple of years. But
right.
But then I went back to winning, you know. I mean, my first couple years of college, I did pretty well at UC Irvine, and then I transferred up to Berkeley, and I thought I was going to light the world on fire. And I got this tremendous setback. But at least I knew who I was, at least when I got cancer. I mean, I was only 19, but I was a very old 19.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew what my strengths were. I knew what I could do. I had already run a small business with a friend of mine. That's how we got enough money to go off to college. I had already proven that I could do well in very difficult science classes, but we had to take the humanities course sequence as biology majors at UC Irvine. But I did really well in that, and so I thought, okay, well, I can do both. You know, I can do science, and I can do the literary arts as well. So I can do whatever I want. And so I had an arrogance and a confidence. And even when the cancer hit, I mean, I knew who I was. So that mm-hmm. was quite stabilizing. And then the fact that I didn't die, I was on my IPO roadshow in 1986. So I guess I was about 30 years old. And we had to put in the prospectus. The underwriters and the lawyers felt we had to put in the prospectus for the IPO that I was a cancer survivor because they felt it was still material, even though it had been over 10 years. And so I considered myself cured. They thought that, well, not everyone might consider you cured. So, and, you know, there are complications that come from it, yada, yada. So they came up with the idea that I would go get a $1 million key man life insurance policy. And we'd see what rate we got. So we put in the prospectus that we got the same rate to buy the policy as a 50-year-old smoker with high blood pressure. And the assertion was that most CEOs of public companies are probably overweight smokers with high blood pressure. And so, you know, I'm no worse than any of those guys. So, you know, chill out about it. But on the road show, my investment banker was a woman who was about my age, and we're good friends now. She's constantly reminding me that I said this. Someone asked right toward the end of one of the dinners where I was speaking to promote the company stock, "How is your health?" And she said that my answer was, Well, I had cancer and I only had a 20% chance of living, but then I didn't die or nothing. So everything's okay. And so, you know, kind of based on that experience, I decided I wasn't going to ever, you know, hide this. In fact, I was going to promote the fact that, you know, I had cancer and was a survivor. And it goes to that question you had about stigma, you know. Because it's stigma hell. I mean, they flat out told me I couldn't pursue the career of my choice, at least not right now, because I was attempting to become a cancer survivor back in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. And so what kind of, you know, job discrimination might have there been? Now, I never knew because I didn't apply for many jobs because I started my own company after a couple years out of college. And I was always the boss. So the only real discrimination was really that one question from the lawyers at the IPO. Are we going to hide this or are we going to explain it? Mm-hmm. And I think I volitionally chose to explain it because I wanted, you know, that you described it, you know, when people hear about that you're a cancer survivor and they kind of like don't want to hear any more about it. Ooh, I don't know about this. This is icky. This is foreign. I don't want anything to do it. I thought, you know, we kind of have to put an end to that, especially with so many more people surviving now than 50 years ago.
Right.
We have to put an end to that stigma. And so the more survivors talk about it, I think the more it people see, oh, well, he or she, yeah, they look normal. I mean, I think, I can't remember her name now, but Louise Dreyfus just came out and explained that she's just recently had breast cancer surgery. And, you know, she's on this TV show. She looks great. She wins these awards. So I think that kind of stuff goes a long way toward normalizing cancer survival. So I'm all for that. Whenever a survivor does any of that sort of stuff, make help people understand and not be afraid.
Are there other things that you would like to ask each other or just say about your experience?
I think that the only other thing that I'd like to add is an understanding of mortality. I think that having cancer makes you understand it more. And I think, like what Roger said, having an understanding of mortality makes you like want to seize the day. I think it also allows you to reflect more on like what it means to be a human, like particularly in the sense that you understand. I don't know. For me, it was more of a spiritual thing. That's what cancer really gave me, a spiritual life.